Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up on today's program, Texas blues man Haddon Sayers dropped out of music for several years after a series of bad breaks, but he's back and he's playing in Sioux City and Sioux Falls this week. And we'll also hear about the Northern State University Marching Wolves. They're going to Washington, D.C. for the inaugural parade. And in a few minutes, we'll have today's Makers interview with women who have made a difference in the state. Judges Kathleen Caldwell and Patricia Ripel joined the program. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. Have you ever marched in an inaugural parade? Are you a fan of the blues and Haddon Sayers? I'm on Twitter at CarlSDPB, or you can email the program midday at sdpb.org. But first, SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks joins us from the state capitol for today's legislative update. Hello, Vicki.
Hi, Carl.
And you were back with the Senate Judiciary Committee this morning?
I was, and there were a couple of bills, and I had many questions, and today they were answered, so that's always exciting. One bill is has to do with juveniles who are sentenced to life in prison. These are young people who commit a murder, and if they're sentenced to for first or second degree murder in South Dakota, and tried as adults, of course, then they are given life in prison without parole, and it's just mandatory. The judge has no options. And the United States Supreme Court ruled sometime last year that that's not constitutional because young people, their brains are not even developed yet, and they have a possibility for rehabilitation. So the state's now with sentencing schemes that mandate life without parole, as South Dakota's does, need to find something different, and this bill that is introduced by the Attorney General is that something different. It allows for sentencing up to life, so juveniles can still get a life sentence without parole, but they have the option, the judge has the option of giving them a lesser sentence.
Quite a bit of discussion in the committee on these bills?
Yes, Lindsay Ryder-Rapp, who is represents defense attorneys, Criminal Defense Attorneys Association. She likes the concept of not sentencing children to life without parole, but she wants the Attorney General, Marty Jackley, looked at the death penalty to craft this legislation, and juveniles cannot legally get the death penalty in America. So she felt that she would like something more directed toward juveniles for a sentencing scheme. And she also would like to have, if some child does get life in prison without parole, she would like some kind of safeguard so that can be reviewed later down the road. Because, 30 years from now, that kid will be a different person.
So what's the next step with these bills?
Well, these passed through.
Okay.
And then there's another one. I don't know if you have time to,
sure,
do this. Another one, a bill, allows the prosecutor to appeal if the – now, this is a very, very rare occurrence. But sometimes a jury will find somebody guilty, and the judge says, I think you called that one wrong, and acquits the defendant. And so the Attorney General wants the prosecutor to be able to appeal in that case and to have the Supreme Court hear the judge's reasons for doing that. And my question – has been, why is that not double jeopardy? But as the Attorney General explained it, it doesn't, what it does is call back the jury's guilty verdict as opposed to, overturning an acquittal.
What are you following this afternoon?
Oh, this afternoon? I'm not following anything.
You're not? Get the afternoon off?
I'm going to write.
We're going to write. So you got to write about all these things.
I am going to write about all these things, yes. I'm going to be doing a Dakota Digest for next week.
Okay. Well, Vicki,
that explains these more thoroughly.
All right. Well, thanks for your time.
Well, thank you, Carl. I'll talk to you later.
All right. That's SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks from the state capitol in Pierre. And you can hear her legislative updates on Dakota Midday through the 2013 session. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. And in late February, PBS airs a special 3-hour television documentary called Makers, Women Who Make America. The program explores women who've helped shape America over the past 50 years. And all this week on Dakota Midday, we're featuring women in South Dakota who have made a difference. When Kathleen Caldwell became a judge in 1993, she was only the second woman appointed to the bench in South Dakota. She served as a circuit court judge and was presiding judge of the Second Judicial Court from 2009 until her retirement earlier this month. And she joins us from our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Judge Caldwell, thanks for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Judge Patricia Ripel, who currently serves in the Second Circuit Court, which includes Minnehaha and Lincoln County. She assumed office in 2007, and she joins us from the University of Sioux Falls as well. Judge Ripel, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, to begin with, Judge Caldwell, we'll start with you, going back to, your early days. When you were in law school, did you have the goal of becoming a judge?
I don't think that I thought about it in law school. It was when I got out of law school and saw that all the judges were men. I just figured that by the time I had some experience under my belt, that possibly I would be somebody that could get appointed as a judge because I was older than the rest of my classmates. I went back to school when I was in my late 20s, and I just thought that maybe my maturity and things like that might give me a leg up.
Judge Ripel, what was your story? Did you want to become a judge?
No, I came into being a lawyer after being a teacher for a couple of years, and I had worked at the public defender's office for 13 years and was about to make a change, and then an opportunity came about for a magistrate's position. And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. I can't say I ever wanted to be a judge, never thought about it, and then I became a magistrate and did that, and I just really enjoyed it. And then I set my goals on becoming a circuit court judge. So I guess I didn't come by it genetically. I just sort of evolved to be a desire on my part.
Well, Judge Caldwell, as you were just talking about the lack of women judges when you were coming up, Judith Meyer Henry was South Dakota's first female judge in 1988, which was a big deal at the time, and then you became the second female judge 5 years later. 5 years later, was your gender still a big deal?
Well, yeah, because as you just said, I was only the second circuit judge appointed, and women just weren't getting appointed to any of those kind of positions. And at the time that I got out of law school, too, women weren't even being hired by the law firms, the major law firms. Davenport Evans hired a woman, and they were the first ones to really break that barrier. So, yeah, there was still quite a block or whatever against women. Women were just not being appointed.
Was
there's still not very many.
So Judge Ripel, still, but you became a judge, circuit judge in 2007. Still, were those feel like there were barriers, or are they just slowly coming down?
Well, I think you just take a look at the numbers and what the percentage of women are statewide on the bench, and you know we're still behind the ball on that. The governor has made some inroads on that and has appointed women recently, but. We are, you know, we're not 50-50. We're not even a third of the judiciary at this point. I think that needs to change, and I think there are many qualified people out there. But, you know, the fact that someone is a woman, you need to look at the qualifications, and if someone's qualified, that's what they should be looking at mainly. And then putting everybody on the same plane, you will find that the women are as equal as any other male candidate. But we are lacking sorely in the number of women on the circuit court bench.
Did Judith Meyer Henry serve as something of a trailblazer and an inspiration for either of you?
I when you were talking about 1988 and when Judy was appointed, I specifically always have a fond memory of meeting her when she was sitting on the juvenile bench, and I just sat in awe in her courtroom and thought, wow, she is something else, and she was a little dynamo, and she was fair, and she was thoughtful, and I was just very impressed with her whole attitude. And then I practiced in front of her for several years, and so, yeah, she's an extremely good role model and a mentor to me, and I respected her on the circuit court bench as well as on the Supreme Court.
And Judge Caldwell, do you feel some of the same way?
Oh, yeah. Judy was a real role model for me. And in fact, she and Mark Meyer Henry, her husband, remember me sitting in their kitchen and them schooling me on how to become a judge. And Mark always takes credit for me being a judge, but he did give me a lot of good advice. But yeah, when I finally got appointed, Judy was really excited, and she had helped me and helped pave the way. And she first said, "I won't have to be alone in all these judges' meetings." The only woman. So, but we were friends before I got appointed. So yeah, she really has been a role model and still is to this day.
And then in return, Judge Caldwell, do you see yourself as then a role model for younger female judges and younger attorneys today?
You know, a lot of them have told me that I am, so I guess that would be the case. And I'm delighted to be a role model, and I think that maybe I have been for some of them.
And Judge Riepel, do you feel the same way?
I think that I think just by virtue of what we have done over the years and people seeing that, I think women have a propensity to come up, and women lawyers, and talk to you and ask for advice and guidance or just suggestions. So I think that over the years has happened, has evolved just by the mere nature of us being what we have been over the years in the legal community. I harken back to when I decided to run. The two people that I went to lunch with was Kathy Caldwell and Judith Meyer Henry, and they said, "What are you thinking about? Get going." And then, of course, Mark was also involved in that. But you go to the people that you feel confident with, and some women have come to me and said, "Judge, what do you think?" And you know, you just give them the truth, and it's fun to be asked, and it's a but we're here. And we do what we do, and people watch you, and that's part of it all.
Moving beyond the whole aspect of gender, Judge Caldwell, are there certain qualities it takes to be a good and effective judge, certain personality traits that go beyond just being schooled in the law and understanding how the courtroom works?
Well, I think that you have to have a lot of patience, because there are a lot of times in the courtroom where you have, well, most of the time in the courtroom, you have people obviously on either side of the question. People are arguing. Sometimes attorneys will get personal with each other, and you're just sitting there trying to keep everything under control, and you have to have a lot of patience. And, you know, there are times when you want to just stand up and scream at people, and you can't do that. And you have to be able to make a decision. There are judges that can't make a decision. And I can remember back when I was practicing law, you just want a decision, whether it's yes or no. You don't need a legal treatise written on the subject. And so I think being able to make a decision and being patient are the two qualities I would say you need to have.
And Judge Riepel, do you agree with that?
I believe decisiveness is just the most important thing that you can bring, because like Kathy says, people want to know. They want some finality. They want some closure to their matter. The other, as well as the other qualities she's indicated, I think that you have to bring to the bench a sense of compassion and an ability to look at people for what they are, not what you would like them to be or not like you yourself, but to look at the circumstances in which these people are coming to you in, and not judge them in the sense of holding it against them because they didn't have the same opportunities you have. You have to have compassion and empathy. You have to be decisive, and you just have to be firm.
What do you see, Judge Riepel, as some of the biggest challenges to being a judge? Is it those aspects, patience, decision, being decisive, and being able to have compassion, or there are other things there?
I think when you take those factors and you put them all together, I think daily, in some way, you are tested on that, whether you be on the civil calendar, the criminal calendar, the juvenile calendar. Those types of feelings come out in every case that you have, and you have to be able to look at something objectively and make a decision. the hardest part about being a judge for me is sentencing, you know, and dealing with children, parental right terminations. You are affecting people in so many ways and other people around. It's like throwing a rock in a pond and there's ripples. It's just not that person in front of you, specifically in abuse and neglect cases. So I think you have to have even though it's tough, you have to be decisive and you have to make the decision. And you do that on a daily basis. You do it on an hourly basis oftentimes.
Judge Caldwell, challenges for you as that you saw when you were a judge?
Well, I just think, taking off what Pat just said, you have to be able to look somebody in the eye and say, you're never going to see your children again. Hmm. Or you're going to prison for 30 years, and even though your wife is sitting there with your new baby, what you did doesn't justify anything other than 30 years. Those things are really difficult if you're paying attention to what you're doing. And just as Pat said, day in and day out, hour in, hour out, you can just come out of a really draining sentencing or a really draining hearing where you've had to make some really exhausting decision, and 5 minutes later you are back in the courtroom facing something else. So you have to have some flexibility, because you're going to face different things every day, every hour, and you just have to have a steady ability to be steady and bring your best game to the job every day. But it can get exhausting.
I think for a lot of us, what we know about judges is what we see on television, whether fictional programs or reality shows like Judge Judy. Do you think these television programs have created misunderstandings about judges and how the legal system works, Judge Rappel?
Oh, I think they've done a disservice to the judiciary. I seldom see anything on TV that I think is remotely what happens in a courtroom. So, you know, you get that all the time. Oh, are you Judge Judy? And, and you know, I just, you have to laugh it off. It's sort of sad, because that's not what judges are. They're not up there being growly and eating on the bench and being saying rude things. And that's not what we do. So that's the media, and that's the TV, and that's what sells, and that's what puts people to watching them. I don't think it reflects us.
Yeah. How do you think that affects then the people that then are in the courtroom?
Oh, I don't think it affects them at all. I think once they've come in the courtroom and they've sat there and they've watched the session and they've had the judge talk to them, I don't think that carries over to their impression of the judge in the courtroom. You know, I can only give you my opinion on that.
Yeah, and Judge Caldwell, your impression of the impact of those television programs on our understanding of how the judiciary works?
Well, Judge Judy's really the only one I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, she doesn't ever listen to what the people are saying. They mm-hmm. will say, you know, my boyfriend backed into me, and she'll go, oh, okay, I know what's going on, you know, or something like that. And she just will launch off on her own tangent, and I think that a judge has to sit there for a while and listen to what the problem is. So, you know, I think that things like the OJ trial, things like that affect, and the McDonald's coffee case affect our people that come in our courtrooms for jury trials much more than the TV judges. That's my impression.
How does it affect the jury trials? Because they think that's how it works on television?
Yeah, and they'll come in, the attorneys will always ask the jurors, you know, did anybody read about that McDonald's case where a woman got millions of dollars because their coffee spilled on her lap? And everybody's heard of it, and everybody thinks it was a bad idea, and, you know, it turns people off toward the judicial system and toward the jury system, and the attorneys have to work a lot with that to say, you know, first of all, that's not normal. Second of all, you don't know what all the facts were. And don't judge the whole judiciary by the fact that there's some odd decisions that have come out over the years.
Judge Rappel, for you, what has been most rewarding about being on the bench?
I totally enjoy what I do, but I've been fortunate in the last couple of years, in addition to my calendar, I've been given the opportunity to start a drug court in our community. And to me, after being in the system, and I'm going to say I've been in the system about 31 years, I believe that our drug court is actually making a difference in people's lives, in a very positive, making a positive difference in their lives. So this is a new adventure or a new area for me that I've been involved in. And for me, I can't think of anything, you know, besides my family and my children and my husband, that this is so rewarding for me that it's just very exciting. So it's exciting for me to be part of this new adventure. And in addition to doing my judge responsibilities, I like being a judge. I enjoy jury trials. I enjoy all the facets of it for the most part. But being part of this drug court phenomenon that's taking place throughout the state is just very exciting.
And Judge Caldwell, you retired, less than 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
Yes. Has that been a big adjustment? Are there certain things about being in court that you really miss?
Well, not really. I told the people here at the radio station that I got out to my car this morning. I had my bedroom slippers on. So I think I'm adjusting quite well to retirement. I love it.
So looking back, do you see that perhaps there's a legacy, some things that you left behind?
Well, I did chair the whole juvenile detention alternative initiative here in South Dakota, or in Sioux Falls, Minnehaha County, that started in 2010 or 2009. We started putting it together, and it actually got off the ground January of 2012, and we have reduced the amount of juveniles who are incarcerated, locked up, and reduced the crime rate, reduced a lot of things changed a lot of things that we had been doing with juveniles that were not evidence-based practices, and that South Dakota was one of the states that had locked up the most juveniles on an average basis. And the studies show that if you're locked up as a juvenile, the chances of you being locked up as an adult just go up exponentially. And the whole Criminal Justice Initiative program that the state is now looking at doing is exactly what we did with the juveniles, and it's based on the same basic principles. So that's something that I got off the ground, and I'm hoping that that will be my part of my legacy anyway.
Well, Judge Caldwell, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday, and enjoy your retirement.
Thank you.
And Judge Reipel, thanks for your time as well.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Patricia Reipel serves as judge in South Dakota Second Circuit Court, and Kathleen Caldwell served as Second Circuit judge until her retirement earlier this month. And they joined the program as part of our week-long series of interviews with women who have made a difference in South Dakota. The interviews are in connection with a special 3-hour PBS documentary airing in February called Makers, Women Who Make America. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, Texas bluesman Haddon Sayers joins the program. Plus, we'll hear about the NSU Marching Wolves trip to Washington for the inaugural parade. And you're welcome to join the conversation. Are you a fan of the blues and Haddon Sayers? Have you ever marched in the inaugural parade? We'd like to hear from you. I'm on Twitter, Carl SDPB, and you can email us at midday@sdpb.org.